Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. We've had a big hiatus since, I think, a week before Pesach was our last year, but all sorts of factors beyond our control conspired. Actually, Alyssa gave me mussar. See, sometimes the members of the shul can give the rabbi mussar appropriately. But last week, I mentioned, when first I was away, then I can't remember, there was one conflict. Then I said, I assumed that we would have shir last week. And then I realized that it was Yom HaTzmaut. It happens to be at this stage of my life, I don't necessarily do so much on Yom HaTzmaut mornings. I could have given shir, but I had said something to Alyssa, like, but probably with all the people, especially with young kids, and people doing things, to leave different things in the morning, kids home from school, probably not a good idea to have shir last Wednesday. So she said, you're right, yeah, it won't work. So I said, okay, too bad, or something like that. She wrote, well, it's not too bad, we got a Medina out of it. So I accepted that buzzer, but all sorts of things, including good things conspired that we have not had the Wednesday shir, but I'm happy that we can finally meet after all these weeks. And even though we're more than halfway through, or about halfway through Sfirat HaOmer, but never too late to kind of take a step back and appreciate, I guess, from a hashkafic perspective, but also very practically from a halacha perspective, on a very practical level, how do we understand Sfirat HaOmer, and specifically what's the role of women when it comes to Sfirat HaOmer. So that is our topic for today. I have not yet decided. 2 weeks from now, it would be the day before Yom Yerushalayim. So I think we'll definitely give a shir about Yom Yerushalayim. The question would be next week. I could either make a part two of Sfira, or maybe we'll do a two-part about Yerushalayim or Eretz Yisrael. I haven't decided that yet. Come on in, ladies. I have one source sheet, but it's good because you're related. You could share. Anyway, so the topic of Sfirat HaOmer really begins in the Chumash. I did not put that on the source sheet. Leah will forgive me. But I just assumed that the women know Tanakh. If this was a men's shir, I'd have to spell out. God gave the Torah. There are five books. You know, it didn't start with Baba Kama. But you, of course, all women are very educated. You know about Tanakh and Chumash. So I didn't give you the Psukim. But twice in the Torah describes the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer. And the truth of the matter is, we relate to this, and I'm going to use the term because that's what's relevant to us, as Sfirat HaOmer, counting the days. But the truth is, in the Torah's presentation, that's actually the third and final component. Really, there are three different components that are mentioned in the Torah, and part of the issue, even on a hashkafa, or perhaps on a halachic, and even specifically when it comes to women, part of the question of the question about sphere is trying to understand the relationship between the components, or what is the primary component. Now, I'll stop speaking in riddles, and I'll explain to you what I mean. The Torah describes three things. The first is the Katsiras HaOmer. They would actually harvest the barley that would be used for the Karban HaOmer. That's the Katsira. They actually had to harvest it. It didn't come from nowhere. It had to be harvested, turned into flour. Then there was the Hava'a, right? Second day of Pesach, they brought the actual Karban. The Omer refers to a certain measurement that was brought as a Karban in the Beis HaMikdash. And then the Torah says, after you have harvested and brought this Karban, now count, and that's where the name HaOmer comes from, because we're counting from the Omer. We've brought the Karban Omer, now count 49 days / 7 weeks until we get to Shavuos / another Karban. We bring on Shavuos, the Karban of the Shtei HaLechem. So there really are three different components, and all three actually interact. There was the harvesting, then there was the bringing of this Karban, and then the Torah is saying to count from Pesach to Shavuos, from Karban to Karban. And the question, in part, is, you know, what's the real theme? Why are we counting? What is so special about this period of time? How much does it relate to Pesach and Shavuos? How much does it relate to the agricultural season? How much does it relate to those Karbanos? And again, we relate to it just on the question of counting the days. But we can't really appreciate what we're supposed to be doing when we count the days if we don't know why we were counting to begin with. So that will be our opening 5 minutes, just to understand that. And then we'll try to discuss on a more practical halachic level, what the parameters of counting are, the role of women in counting, and we'll see how that even relates to this introduction. So it seems, again, I did not do, and I didn't want to spend the time, because I wanted to get to the halacha, I didn't do an exhaustive presentation of the different interpretations. But if you look in the classical Mefarshim about the Ta'ameh Mitzvos, the reason for Sfirat HaOmer, at minimum you find two different approaches to the Sfira. And let's start with source number one, because it's probably the closest to Pshat, and yet, it's the furthest from our lives. And you know, these things do happen in life. But if you take a look at the first source, the Tur in a commentary on the Torah brings a theory for why the mitzvah of counting. I mean, if you took, let's just to reframe the question, we should, you know, we take it for granted our whole lives, we've known about this thing called counting. But you, why don't we count from Hanukkah to Purim? And why don't we count from Rosh Hashanah to Sukkot? And why don't we, you know, there's any, if you look at the calendar, you could always pick any two important dates and say we should count from one to the other. So why are we counting? It's the only time of the year where we have this mitzvah of counting. So that really begs the question. So one theory, this is the source number one, where it's underlined, it's very, very practical, almost like uninspiringly practical, and totally agricultural. Remember, you know, it wasn't always startup nation, it used to be farming nation. The whole world used to be agricultural. So says the Tur, Lefi shehem yemei hakatzir, this is the harvest season. Now remember, you know, this is before they got the memo you could work from home. There was no Zoom. If you were a farmer and you had all these fields, they weren't necessarily conveniently located, you know. You didn't come home for lunch, evidently. Again, I don't really understand the, you know, I'm as far from it as you are. But still, evidently, the way he described it, you would be away from the house, you know, working hard, sunrise to sunset, for days or weeks at a time. If they weren't at home. They wouldn't know. They might not know the right dates. How are they supposed to know when Shavuos is? They didn't know when Rosh Chodesh Iyar is. They're going to be out in the field. Nobody told them. There was no, I don't know, big, you know, Mizrahi conference to go to. There was no Zoom. They didn't. There was no WhatsApp, you know, reminders. Oh, you wasn't sending out reminders to count. They didn't know. How are they supposed to know? At home, when people are in the community, right, again, before, I don't just mean like in the ancient days when we only had a phone. I mean in the really, really ancient days. You know, not when the phone was on the wall. I mean like in ancient days, had they know anything? They had messengers. And now's not the time to belabor the point. You're all, I'm sure, more or less familiar. But the Mishnah describes, we know historically, they used to have messengers go out from Yerushalayim throughout the country to tell people it's Rosh Chodesh, it's the new month. That's how they kept track of things. But that only works if you're in the neighborhood. Right, if you're out there and, you know, and who knows where, you know, then you wouldn't necessarily know. So he says very practically, therefore, everyone's home for Pesach, or slash in Yerushalayim for Pesach, they're together, everyone knows when Pesach is, and then they just started counting, because that way, even though they would be traveling and be so busy with their farming, and their harvesting, but as long as they started counting from the second day of Pesach, they would know when Shavuos is. Very, very practical, very realistic, and if you take aside the very, very practical, uninspiring part of it, but the assumption, which I think is what I was referring to when I said it's pshat, the assumption is that this is really an agricultural time period. The real theme here, the dominant theme, was agriculture. And we went from carbon to carbon. It's an agricultural season, and that was marked by this counting. Now, if that's true, as I say, that's also going to be incredibly remote and hard for us to relate to, because we ain't farmers. I speak for myself, but nevertheless. Therefore, I think much more popular is the understanding of the Rambam. The Rambam in source number 2 in Mor Nevuchim points out that it's true that the Torah does say count from one carbon to another, and there is this clear theme of katsira, of harvesting. But nevertheless, says the Rambam, really, 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 we have to understand that those are just like signs. Those are just, you know, but don't get confused. It's easy. It's a mnemonic to remember, and it's true about the theme of the time period. It is the time period of harvesting, but that's not why we're counting. What we're really counting is to link Pesach and Shavuos. It happens to be a harvest season. There is an agricultural carbon, not an animal carbon, but an agricultural carbon. All true. But says the Rambam in source number 2, the main thing is that it's Shavuos that we're counting to, and Shavuos was the holiday of Matan Torah. That's the assumption that we make, that that's when the Torah was given. And therefore, to create excitement and anticipation, lahagdil hayom ahu, yimnu hayom min hamoed harishon elav. We count. You know, Bubby's coming. The grandparents are coming. You know, people are visiting. We count, right? You have the thing on the refrigerator and you start, you know, you're counting every day. It's to build excitement. It's to build momentum. And the Rambam gives the analogy. I didn't have to be so creative. Says the Rambam, end of the first line. Kamosha mamtin bohaneman, shebohavav hu moneh hayom v'gam hashaot. Right? You're so excited. You're counting the hours. You're counting the days until this exciting person comes, right? You see this a lot. You know, you have a couple. They're dating or they're engaged, you know, and then they're separated for the summer, or he goes back to his parents for Pesach or something, and they're counting, and it's so cute. You know, they're counting, you know, I'm going to see him in 12 and a half more days, and, you know, this kind of thing. And I'm trying to remind you all of what it was once like, and, you know, very exciting. You know, passion should still be there, just maybe in a little bit more mature form. It's like the annoying thing when people still think they're like dating and they're like 48. Like, come on, all right? Again, you hope everyone has a very loving, passionate relationship, but still, you know, mature. Anyway, I digress. So says the Rambam, that excitement where you can't wait for something to happen and therefore you're counting, that's what Sfiras HaOmer is. We're building momentum, we're building excitement to get to Matan Torah. Now this obviously is not... Now, I'm not saying that all of us can relate to this in the sense that we may not be on the level we're supposed to be. You know, how many of us are really getting so excited and we're getting, you know, for the cheesecake, and it was not about the cheesecake anyway, but, you know, about, do we really feel that? Okay, but, so that's something we can work on. I'm not saying we're on that level. I could give a whole shiur to a bunch of young boys about what tefillin is supposed to be. It doesn't mean that they're actually feeling it every time they put on their tefillin. But at least we can relate to those themes and we can aspire to them. The agricultural thing is harder for us even to relate to. Here, I think we can relate to the analogy, and we can also relate to hopefully being excited. I mean, just again, we're going to dive in and we're going to pivot in a second to the halacha. But I think, you know, I say this as chizuk, not as musr. But I think that it's something that we really could do if we're aware of this. You know, just try to think about, you know, we'll get to it in a second, whether you are actually counting and whether you should be counting. But let's assume for now you are counting. And even if you're not, even just take a moment every day. If you're counting, you would do it before you count. That would make sense. But even stop during this period of time, just even spend a minute, half a minute, just think about, what would my life be without Torah? Who would I be? How meaningless would my life be? Where would I live? Who would I be married to? Like, my whole life would be completely different. And I hope that you also assume that if it would be impoverished, and not nearly as meaningful and as wonderful a life, if I hadn't had a relationship with Hashem, of Judaism, of Torah, etc. So even with that, when did that happen? If it wouldn't be for Shavuos, if it wouldn't be for Matan Torah, I wouldn't have any of these good things. So it's not just, you know, today's the 26th day, today's the 27th day, today's whatever. I'm counting to the day that changed my life. Right? So I'm not saying I do that every time I count either, but I should. This is something we all could do. We should aspire to, and that's the message of these days according to the Rambam. And again, equally applicable whether you're a farmer or not, and equally applicable whether you're a male or a female. Okay, now, with that, please.
I've heard lots of reasons of why we count up and not down.
Right.
But it does seem like it would make a lot more sense to count down. Like,
I mean, we're used to that. I don't know how much is that just a...
You could forget that you're counting till... Like,
250, right. I hear... I don't...
Yeah,
it's a fair point. Like you said, I don't have anything particularly insightful to add on that. I think you're right. There are different people who give different theories, but the Rambam clearly was not bothered by that. But I agree with you. At least our convention is that, yes, if I was having a thing on the fridge, you know, until Bubby and Zadie come, until Grandma and Grandpa come, you know, we would be probably counting, you know, 20, 19, 18. You're right. It's an interesting point. But the overall point, I think, your point is well taken, but I think the overall point is still a very, very powerful one. Okay, now... with this background, we can start to understand a little bit of the practical halacha as well. Now, on the one hand, Sfirat HaOmer, as I mentioned, is in the Torah. It's in the Chumash. So we assume that, therefore, it's a biblical mitzvah d'oraisa, a biblical commandment. On the other hand, now that we've talked about the Karban, and the fact that the Torah does link counting from one sacrifice, second day of Pesach, to another sacrifice on Shavuos, but we don't have sacrifices anymore, not only do we don't have animal sacrifices, we don't have flower sacrifices, we don't have any kind of sacrifices, there's no Beis HaMikdash. Is there still a mitzvah to count Sfiras HaOmer? So the truth is that the Rambam says yes. This is verse number 4. The Rambam, very, very briefly, says, this mitzvah to count, I'll call Ish Mi Yisrael. Now, we'll get to it in a little bit, but the Rambam, when the Rambam says Ish, he's being gender specific. He means not women, but we'll get back to that. That's not our topic at the moment. We'll get to that soon. But the Rambam says everyone's commanded, no matter where you live, even if you live in Teaneck, you know, if you live in London, you don't have to live in Beit Shemesh or Yerushalayim, no matter where you live, you have to count Sfiras HaOmer, and adds the Rambam, u'b'chol zman, two words. Very famous opinion of the Rambam. The Rambam thinks that counting today is just as much a mitzvah as it was 3,000 years ago. It's not impacted by a lack of a Beis HaMikdash. Interesting, we'll have to think about why that should be so. But before we answer that question, just take a look at source number 6 for a moment.
Nice thing. So he thinks it's d'oraisa?
Yes, 100%. Most other Rishonim disagree. So as a sample, I gave you a source number 6, the Ran. Right, the Ran was a little bit later, and it was also from one of the Chachmei Sfarad. And the Ran says, don't just take my word for it, says the Ran, number 6, Rov Mefarshim Maskimim Desfira Omer Achshav Dalaka Hava'a Vilo Karban Einu Ela Midrabanan Ba'ama Zecher LaMikdash. Says the Ran, most authorities disagree with the Rambam. And they hold that nowadays, yes, we count. You have to count. But it's only Durabanan. It's just a way of remembering what they once upon a time did. Right? We have a lot of things like this in Yiddishkeit where, you know, the real action was the Beis HaMikdash. But since we don't have that, we do this Zecher LaMikdash. We do this to remember the Mikdash. Rav Soloveitchik used to point out that if you think about it over the course of a calendar year and a life of experiences, there are two types of Zecher LaMikdash. There are some times where we do things to remember the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So we leave a spot in our house unpainted. A woman's not supposed to wear a tiara or a kind of a crown when she gets married. A man, if some of you may have known this, people always do this. They put ashes where the tefillin would be at the chuppah. These are all ways of remembering, in a sense of being sad, remembering that our joy cannot be complete without the Beis HaMikdash. That's a Zecher LaMikdash in one form. But there's other types of Zecher LaMikdash, like this, but we're not necessarily reminding, or at least not obviously reminding ourselves of how sad it is we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, as much as we're doing things that really don't make sense to do anymore, but we're doing them anyway to remember what was done in the Beis HaMikdash and therefore keep our connection to the Beis HaMikdash. So that's what the Ran says, and that's what most Mefarshim say. Midaraisa, the mitzvah needed a carbon. We don't have a carbon anymore, so really we shouldn't count at all. The answer is no, this was one of those things where the Chazal said we should still do it as a way of remembering and connecting and linking back to the Beis HaMikdash and to the Karbanos. Now, leave aside that I already a little bit biased you because I told you and you saw it with your own eyes that there's a majority view. But leave aside the power of numbers. Who do you think makes more sense? What's the more logical view? What would you say? The second view. Okay, anyone disagree with Mr. Simons?
Well, it's given in the context of the carbon.
Right, so you agree with, so that's why, which is what the Ron says, which is what Mr. Simons said, which is now, that's what Grossman said. Does anyone disagree with the emerging consensus? We're having groupthink, ladies. Who wants to think out of the box? Anyone disagree? If you don't disagree, you don't have to, but anyone disagree?
Well, given that the Rambam said that it's because of recounting up until we got the Torah,
excellent, excellent, excellent. So this is exactly what the Aruch HaShulchan says. Fantastic. So I just wanted to go through the process. I think it's obvious that you guys are right. That more intuitively, if you'd ask me, of course it's only Durabanan now. Not just because, more people said it. It's putting the cart before the horse. Why didn't more people say it? Because it seems obvious it's connected to the carbon. Didn't the Rambam know that? We can make our jokes about yeshiva guys not knowing Tanakh. But the Rambam knew Tanakh. He spent the year in seminary before going to yeshiva. You didn't know that? It's in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It says that somewhere. Anyway, so the Rambam knew Tanakh. Didn't he know that? So it says the Aruch HaShulchan, fantastic. Number 5. Ms. Mozankis, fantastic. Number 5 says the Aruch HaShulchan. He agrees with the Rambam. Tzivta Torah limnos l'ha karbon. Yes, okay. The Aruch HaShulchan also learned Tanakh. He knew that he was supposed to count towards the karbon on Shavuos. And yet, aval ikar ha-kavanah hi'u la-matan Torah. Exactly what you said. Since the real thing is Matan Torah, and who told him that? That's the Rambam's opinion. Since he thinks the real thing is not the carbons. The carbon are just a way, it's bookends. It's just a way of remembering. Again, if we lived in a Beis HaMikdash world, that would actually matter to us. But it's a way of identifying it. It's not irrelevant, but it's not the real essence. The real essence is Pesach to Shavuos, and for those of you who were with us, the last day that we met before today, when we had our pre-Pesach shiur, we had a few of them. We had a lot of practical halacha shiurim, cleaning the house, etc. But then we had a shiur just on Haggadah Dvar Torah, if you remember. And one of the things I'm pretty sure I remember, I usually say it every year, so I assume I said it this year also, from the Maharal, all about the idea that the whole freedom of Pesach is only meaningful because it led to us getting a Torah. That we don't negate physical freedom or political freedom, but it's not really the end in and of itself. Physical and political freedom are important because if you have a Torah and have a way of meaningful life, now you can actually live your values as opposed to if you're a slave or you're living in communist Russia or whatever, you can't live your values. But to be free but have no morality, to be free with no direction, to be free with no meaning is a different form of servitude. So that idea, which I quote from the Maral every year, and we can probably find 10 other thinkers who say the same thing, that's exactly what the Aruch HaShulchan and Rambam are saying here. That's why we count. As excited as we are on Pesach, wow, we went free. All right, then we're already counting up or down, as the case may be, but we're already counting towards what the real goal is. The real goal is to get, and that's not only a hashkafic idea, which is what we've been emphasizing, but here you see perhaps a practical halachic difference. According to the Rambam, he severs the link between Sfirta Omer and the Karban. He really downplays the role of the Karban. He downplays the agricultural theme. Doesn't matter where you are. You don't have to be a farmer. You don't have to live in Israel. You don't have to have a Beis HaMikdash or a Karban. It's Pesach freedom to Shavuos meaning and spirituality. And the fact that we need both in our lives and we link them by counting, and therefore the counting is just as meaningful today as it was then in its mitzvah d'oraita. Now, all of that notwithstanding, and it's a beautiful idea, on a technical level, most authorities disagree. And generally, l'halacha, practically speaking, someone would ask me, I would tell you, we generally do assume that nowadays is the Rabbana. Now you'll say, what's the nafkimi? Why would anyone ask you? Rabbi, I have a shayla. Is counting? I just counted. Is that a Darabana or a Daraisa? People don't ask those kind of questions. But what kind of questions do people ask? I'm not sure if I counted or not. Don't remember. I have a suffix. So since we view this as being merely rabbinic, we can say suffix Darabana, l'kul. You can assume that you counted. If we felt it was a Daraisa, we'd be more strict. Okay? So it's actually a very practical, there is a practical element to this question, and we generally assume, like the majority view, that it is Daraisa. Okay? Good. Now let's keep on going. When do we count? What do you mean, when do we count? Between Pesach and Shavuos? Sorry, what? What? Oh, I said Daraisa? Sorry. Oh, good, good. Okay, at least two people were listening. Thank you. Okay, yes, I meant to say Darabana. Thank you. Now, when do we count? I don't mean what time of year, because that we've been talking about. I mean, what time of day? We count at night. Why?
That's when the day starts.
Why does that matter?
Because you need to count. You need to wait a certain amount of time to the next counting.
Oh, so I can't count too early, but why shouldn't I wait till the next morning? And you're right. So you're almost there. We got you almost there. We just needed the help of source number 7. Source number 7 is the Medrash, the Sifra. And the Sifra points out, again, I didn't put all the psukim on the page, so I apologize, but one of the phrases that's well known in the Chumash is Sheva Shabbosos Temimos. They should be complete. 7 complete weeks. So this reminds us of 5th grade multiplication. What's 7 times 7? 49. 7 complete weeks. But the term Temimos is understood by the Medrash as not only saying that it's 7 complete weeks, but that therefore, at least, when did you start? On the second day of Pesach, we should count. When on the second day? So says the Medrash, source number 7, Talmud Lomer, Sheva Shabbosos, Tmimos, Tiena, Ema Sahem, Tmimos. When can you say I counted all 7 weeks, a complete 7 weeks? Bizman Shematchio, Be'erev. So that's why, right, in America, or in Chutzlar, it's always easier because it's at the second Seder that you count. Right, when you're in Eretz Yisrael, so that's wonderful, but one of the downsides is, like, what am I doing the second night? Am I at the Yishai Rebo concert? I'm at this concert? I'm on a Teul up north? I'm in a Tzimmer? It's much easier to forget. At the Seder, right, people remember on the second Seder, right? And you don't want to be that person who forgot day one. Like, you're not completely embarrassed if you forget somewhere in the middle. A little embarrassed, maybe, but you really don't want to be the Shlomazel who forgot day one. That's just loser with a capital L. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's not nice to say, but it is. Anyway, I don't know if anyone's ever done it, but no one's ever admitted it to me. I can tell you that. Huh? Maybe. What? Correct. So we're going to, again, that factor, Mr. Simons, and how that impacts women, we're going to get to. Okay? So that was true on the first night, says the Medrash. What about every night thereafter? Do we count at night? Does it matter? So this is actually a machlok. So everyone agrees the first night you have to count at night because we have to start in the beginning of it, and we wait until the next day. We're ready late. We didn't get it. So at the beginning of the seventh day, the first day of the Omer, we have to count right away. But what about day 27? What about day 15? Does it matter if I count at night after that? That's not obvious. And that's actually a machloket, a very complicated machloket. I'll just summarize, we'll do it outside for the sake of time. In sources 8 and 9, there seem to be 3 views in the Rishonim. The Rambam says, source number 8, ideally you should count at night, but if you didn't, no biggie. So you count during the day. And the Rambam by not making any qualifications, seems to say, you count with a bracha. Why wouldn't you? There's an ideal time and a less ideal time. But as long as it is day 27, that, as you said correctly, Steve, from the night until the next night, so any time during that 24-hour period, I can count. A little bit better if I count. You know, it's reason makdimin. It's always better to do things with enthusiasm and alacrity and the first chance you can get. But I forgot. The app didn't work. I silenced my phone. I fell asleep. No one reminded me. So I'll count the next day with a bracha. That's the Rambam's view. However, in source number 9, Tosfot count seem to be two other opinions. Rabbeinu Tam seems to say that you can't necessarily count it in the day at all. Right? It's only a night mitzvah. Now that sounds crazy because we're not used to it. But it's not really crazy if you think about many other things in Judaism, right? They have their time. A lot of day mitzvahs that can't be done during the night. A lot of night mitzvahs that can't be done there. But if you said, I was too tired, I didn't go to the Seder, but it's okay, the next morning I had my matzah. Right? That's ludicrous. On the other hand, if you said, you know, I wanted to get a head start, therefore I delivered my shalach manos at night. That's also right. The shalach manos has to be during the day. So certain things have to be during the day, certain things have to be at night. So the Rebbeinu Tam seems to say, yeah, either do it during the right time or don't do it.
Not only mitzvah, though, that starts at night. It's most things in Judaism start...
No, I understand that Purim starts during the night too. But there are mitzvos, like the Suda and the Shalach Manos, that have to be during the day. You can't do them at night. That's the wrong time. Tefillin is not at night. Tefillin is during the day. Right? And certain things are dafka at night. Not during the day. Certain things during the day, not at night. And so Toso says, yeah, that's like Sfirat Omer. When the Medrash says Tmimos means counting at night, it didn't just mean the first time. I mean every night. It has to be at night. Yeah.
Why don't we count it during the morning? Like in Shachar's?
There are shuls that do that, by the way.
Yeah, because I would think, but like, we start at...
Because the answer is because of the Medrash. Because again, you're emphasizing the Shittateich, the Matan Torah theme. But in this case, the Medrash says not so much focusing. The Medrash doesn't make a linkage dafka to the carbon or not to the carbon. But the Medrash says we have a pasuk that says tamimot, and that's what it means. It means
it's not tamimot if it's till the morning on Matan Torah. Because Matan Torah is in the morning, so if it's till the night.
Again, lechachilo you for sure count during the night. At least, that's the first night. The Rambam, even the Rambam who says you can count during the day, but it doesn't seem like that's ideal. Because even the Rambam says, shakach v'lo mana b'layla. Yeah.
So if you don't say it the first night, you can't say it the next morning, the first day without a bracha.
Again, we can't paskin based on this medrash, but you surely did something wrong. We haven't gotten to yet. We all want to get to, and don't worry, I'm getting there. Sometimes we're a little slower than you want me to, but I am getting there. What happens if you forgot? We're getting to that stuff, but we haven't even discussed that yet. But I just want to point out, this is very important, because the third opinion, which ends up becoming the most dominant one, and this is the one that you're all familiar with, practically, is in source number 9, is actually a minority view, but it's a minority view that ends up having very big influence. And that is the opinion of the Bahag. The Bahag that's an abbreviation, Roshei Tevot, for Baal Halachot Gedolot. And let's assume more or less that he comes from the time of the Gaonim. The Gaonim was like after the Gemara, but before the Rishonim, a little earlier even than that. And said the Bahag in the bottom of source number 9, you really should count at night. But if you didn't count at night, you could count during the day, without a bracha. And then adds the Bahag, but what if you missed a night and a day? Then you're out. Now what does out mean? This is a very common mistake. Out means you can't make a bracha anymore according to the Shulchan Aruch. Now, according to the Bahag, it really means you can't count at all. But that's the Bahag says you're out. Okay, we'll get to, so how does that, practically speaking, bottom of the page, source number 10. How do we paskin? So the Shulchan Aruch is not going to be surprising, because it's what you all have been raised with and taught your whole lives. Says the Shulchan Aruch, source number 10, number 1, if you forgot and didn't count at all at night, count the next day with a bracha. Without a bracha. What if you forgot a whole 24-hour period? Bottom line, emshakach levarach b'echad mihayamim, bein b'yom rishon, bein mishar yamim. Practically speaking, we don't distinguish. Because the Bahag didn't distinguish. And we're basically paskin like that Bahag. Sofer b'shar yamim, below bracha. So keep on counting, but without a bracha. Now it's not really clear that that's the Bahag as much as we're worried that maybe the Bahag is right. Sounds like the Bahag was really saying, once you're out completely. There's no point even counting. We're not really sure he's right, but on the other hand, we're not sure he's wrong. Therefore, we hedge. Right? Sometimes in life we hedge, right? You know, we want to play the odds. Right? It's not only an investment strategy, or sometimes a parenting strategy. Strategy. Sometimes it's a halakhic strategy. So therefore we say, keep on counting, because maybe the Bahag is wrong. But don't make a bracha anymore, because maybe the Bahag is right. Now, for those who have really good memories, which I exclude myself, except for in this case it's cheating, because I give the shear. So actually, mostly, not always, remember what I've said. But some of you may remember that we had a shear about women in Megillah reading. And if you recall, it was a similar phenomenon where you had a whole view of Rishonim, and then there was one minority view. And who was the minority view? The same person, the Bahag. And just like in Megillah reading, where the Bahag had said women can't read for men, and then maybe not even for themselves, but we, if you remember then, we saw this was shocking to some of you. I remember even my mother-in-law was texting my wife during the shiur. I have the receipts. When did your husband become so liberal? Right? All I was doing was quoting the sources. Most Rishonim said that a woman could read for a man. But we don't paskin like that. Why? Because there's one of you who disagreed. The Bahag. So here, and at the time I said to you, it's not like an anti-women thing. Every now and then the Shulchan Aruch gives this outsized weight to the Bahag. And my proof is this. This is nothing with women now. We haven't discussed women at all yet. Here also, the Bahag is more machmir than anybody else. And we are very much, he has outside influence in halacha. Okay, so that's the practice that we're all familiar with. And that is halacha l'maaseh. If anyone would ask me, I would tell you, yes, count at night. If you count at night, make a bracha. If I forgot, count in the morning without a bracha. Or if I forgot for all 24-hour period. So really, you have to keep on counting. Like, why not? Who said that maybe the Bahag's not right? He's a minority view. Don't make a bracha just in case he is right. But you really, now, psychologically, we all know that does not happen. Once a person doesn't make a bracha anymore, they just assume, well, what's the point? I think someone once gave a theory, I can't remember who, I don't want to attribute it to a name because I might be wrong, but I think someone once gave a theory as to how the minhag evolved in America or in Chutz La'aretz, that people don't sit in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres. The Gemara is explicit that outside of Israel, you still, again, in Israel, it's clear you don't sit in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres. But the Gemara is explicit that outside, just so we have 2 days of Yom Tov, so we're not sure which is the seventh day, which is the eighth day of Sukkot, so just in case, sit in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres and don't make a bracha, don't make a lay shave. And then it became this very popular minhag, which became known as a Hasidish minhag, but it's a very popular minhag, not to even sit in the sukkah. It's like weird. It's against an explicit Gemara. So one of the theories for how that happened, there are all sorts of other theories, well, maybe they were going to the Rebbe's and it was too cold, in Gur, and you know, in Chaslavich, and wherever else people were going to, in Belz, and in Babov, it was too cold in the winter, maybe. But the other theory, which I think is much more, at least potentially legitimate, and not that it's correct, but I can understand it better, is psychologically. Once you tell people they're not making a bracha, they feel like, it's not really a mitzvah. It's wrong. The mitzvah stands on its own. I'm not trying to be mezalzel, God forbid, and you know, denigrate a bracha. But a bracha is not as important as the mitzvah. Right? The bracha is like the extra, you know, the extra card you give with the gift. Right? But trust me, the gift's more important. And the thought's also important, but not the card itself. Right? You just because you don't have a card, I forgot a card, I'm not going to give the gift. That doesn't make any sense. So the mitzvah is the mitzvah even without the bracha. But psychologically, I understand that once people are out, they think they're out completely. Okay, it's a mistake, but it is what it is. Let's turn the page and now spend the rest of our shiur on you. Women. So what do you think? Should women be obligated to count or not? What do you say? I know you want it to be no. Okay, Esther thinks no. Why should women not be obligated? Okay, maybe it's a time-bound mitzvah. Are you sure? Who said it's time-bound? I didn't say anything. Huh? Oh, okay, so Pesach and Shavuos, that sounds like it's time-bound. Good, okay. Anyone disagree? Anyone can think of a reason why they disagree? Okay, fair. Now, let me ask you this. Do you count? How many in the room count? But I don't know, maybe you feel I'm putting you on your spot. No, people will be embarrassed to answer. So I'll say, how many people, if you would say, do you think the common minhag is nowadays for women to try to count?
Yes.
You agree? Yes. Anyone disagree with that?
I think that it has to come with an asterisk, that if you're gonna start counting, that it's not that you're just trying it out, but that you're going to do it completely.
Okay, so Esther, the seminary teacher is still inside you. It burns bright. You're right. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm asking almost a sociological question. But see, like, is that people, women count?
Yeah. Let me just tell you something. probably the oldest woman in this room here today.
Young at heart.
So, I just could tell you from my grandmothers, my great-grandmothers, they didn't count.
Okay.
For years, I didn't count. And then, about 15 years ago, my husband said, why don't you count? And he was right. And that's when I started. It was very hard at the beginning, you know. And every night he'd say, did you count? Did you count?
I just want to say on behalf of all husbands, that's like so risky. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes as a husband you do something like that and the wife's like, oh, thank you so much for reminding me. Oh, you don't trust me? You don't have confidence? You don't believe in me? Like, I never know what the reaction is going to be. 28 happy years and I still can't predict.
The reason that we count today is because we women, the seeing we're learning.
Yeah. Oh. Why not?
Why shouldn't we accept the mitzvah?
Good, good, excellent, excellent, good. This is fantastic.
And then let's go back to the very first one that you have here, the Torah.
Yeah.
He says here, why did they count it? Why did they count
they
at
were
night?
Home.
They were busy all day.
Right.
Okay? People forget at night. We're busy at night, so
right.
We forget to count.
Right.
But it all goes back to that.
Yeah, good, good, Torah. Excellent, good, good. Yeah, Esther, you want to say something? Still do good. Good. Okay. Excellent. Good. All good. Good. Most things. Yeah. Good. So again, the first question was, are you obligated or not? Most people here assume that you shouldn't be. Let's see if you're correct or not. We'll see. I didn't pass judgment yet. I was just accepting evidence, testimonials. But number two, then I asked the second question was, do women count? I wasn't encouraging one or the other. I was asking what you thought. And I think that what was said here is, I think, probably more typically correct, which is there was a period in the not-so-distant future, past, where very few women tried to count at all. I think now it's probably not 100%, but I think most women do start, at the very least. Okay? Yeah.
Now, there's the conscientiousness associated with this mitzvah, though, it could be that it's one mitzvah, it could be that it's 50 mitzvot. So if you're saying that it's one mitzvah that has 50 sub
49, yeah. Yeah. It's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, yeah.
In other words, that you're getting to the Matan Torah, we also don't want to, just like if you can't make the bracha with Shema Malchus, then maybe you let it go.
Half a loaf is better than none.
Right, if you're going to do it, then you have good. To you're going to do it thoroughly.
Okay, good. So let's see. Now that we know what you say, let's see what the sources say. Okay, good. Excellent. So whether women should be obligated or not, is a machloket. Okay? If you turn back, just to take you 2 seconds, source number 4, the Rambam said, women are exempt. The Nashim, Peturin Mimena. And this, I would suggest, is perhaps, first of all, the answer, the explanation for the Rambam might just be because, it's obviously time-bound. Pesach de Shavuos, 49 days. Like, what could be more time-bound than that? But it could also be another layer, which is that very fact that the Rambam says it's specifically, the Rambam is the one who emphasizes the time component. It's this time period, because it bridges Pesach to Shavuos, to Yitzhak Mitzrayim, I have to go on okay, a little bit, to Matan Torah, so therefore, that's very much about this time, and this time is very special, therefore that would be time bound. That you don't really need to spend so much time explaining the Rambam, because that seems to be more obvious and intuitive. However, there's a shocking opinion, and that's source number 11. Source number 11, the Ramban, Nachmanides says that the Mishnah, he's commenting on a Mishnah. The Mishnah says, this is the source, we did this not this year, but the previous year, last year, in the first season of this women's year, we had a whole 2 or 3 part series on women in mitzvos, and we saw that the Mishnah is the source that says there's this concept called time-bound mitzvos, mitzvah that says man grama, women are exempt. And then the Gemara, just in case we missed the point, says, but the flip side, a mitzvah that says einas man grama, positive mitzvah, which is not bound, not limited by time, women are obligated. And then gives a few examples. So the Ramban goes out of his way, source number 11, to say, don't be too much of a strict constructionist in your reading. Don't be too much of a literalist. Don't think that the few examples that are mentioned are the only examples. Ton of a shear, that's a pop common Gemara term. Sometimes a Mishnah gives a few examples and then in essence it says, etc. And you're supposed to be enough of a chacham, an eibar chacham, to figure out that if these 3 examples, but obviously there's other examples. So says the Ramban, you should know, it's not just a few things that women are obligated in because they're not time-bound. There are also some other mitzvos that women are obligated in because they're not time-bound. And when the Ramban, is giving that list of, yeah, there's a few other things, obviously the women are obligated because they're not time-bound, says the Ramban, source number 11, what's one of them? Sfiras HaOmer. Whoa! This has been a massive controversy for hundreds of years. What is Ramban talking about? How could you say, of all things, Sfiras HaOmer is not Zman Grama? What's ain't Zman Grama Gadol Mizeh? So there's a lot of explanations, and we don't have time, because if I spend time on that, we'll never get to the practical stuff. A lot of explanations for that. But the best explanation, or the simplest explanation, might be what we have in the source number 12 below, which comes from a much less well-known, but also a Rishon, and this is from the student of the son of the Ramban. So this is someone who comes from the intellectual school of the Ramban, so it's even more authoritative in that sense, but says the Maharam Chalava. He didn't come from Vilna, in case you were wondering, or Lodz. This is definitely a Sephardic background. The Maharam Chalava. So he says, according to the Ramban, that it's women are obligated. Absolutely, they must count Sfiras HaOmer. Why? See, sir, ain gorem lo zman, because it's not so much time bound. That's not the issue. That's a mistranslation on our part. It has to be time generated, time caused. It's the actual zman, the sanctity of that time period, which is the mechayev. Rather, what is the mechayev if it's not the time? Hamaisa dahainu. It goes back to our good friend, the topic we've been starting with since the beginning of this year. Will the real sphere to Omer stand up? Is this really about the carbon and agriculture? Is it about Matan Torah and political freedom and spiritual freedom? What's the real theme? So we just said, maybe the Rambam says it really is about the time period, because he thinks it's really about these, you know, Hecherdik, these higher themes of political freedom, spiritual freedom, and that's this 7-week period. But so the Maharam, maybe the Ramban disagrees. He says, no. What is the chiyuv is, you're not counting to Matan Torah. Who said? Where do you see that in the Chumash? Read the Chumash. The Chumash is you're counting from one carbon to the next carbon. Now, that may sound like just semantics, but his theory, and this is a theory which, again, I don't have time to develop, but I think we did discuss this a year ago, is that for a woman to be exempt is not just something coincidentally is at this time, not at that time. That's what I would call time limited. That's not the definition. For a woman to be exempt, it means that the element of time, this calendar day, these 24 hours, this 12-hour period of night versus day, etc., it's that time. Why is a woman exempt from Bris Mila? Because the eighth day of that boy's, of that baby's life, the eighth day is the Mechayev. The Zman, that time period, is what generated the obligation. If time generates the obligation, that's called Zman Grama, and women are exempt. In this case, says the Maram Chalava, obviously it's 49 days, which means not the day before, not the day after. But that's, according to him, that's not the main conceptual point. It's not about the time of the 7 weeks. That's a coincidence. It's from carbon to carbon. What's the trigger? What's the mechayev? What's the trigger? It's not the time, but the carbonot. And that's not merely semantic. According to him, that makes all the difference. Because if time is the trigger, the woman would be exempt. But it happens to be limited in time, but it's not time that's the trigger, it's the carbon or some external thing that's the trigger, then that's not going to exempt women. And therefore, that's his theory for why women might be chayav. Be that as it may, that is a minority view, and the majority view is like the Rambam. The women are not obligated, and that is how we paskin in Shulchan Aruch. Women are not obligated. Now this, of course, brings us to our favorite question, which has already been anticipated by a few of your comments earlier, which is, okay, just because we're not obligated, does that mean we shouldn't do it? Why wouldn't we do it? So on the one hand, this might be similar to, as someone mentioned, I think Esther, you mentioned, like all other things. Sukkah, shofar, just because we're not obligated, lulav, we can still do it. And that is generally correct. That's the default, except for very few exceptions. Then the next question would be, well, if I do it, make a bracha. And this is not a uniquely Sfirat HaOmer question. But a woman shakes lulav. Right? If a woman sits in the sukkah, does she make a leshe basukkah? Does she make an alnatila lulav? Or not? So if you may know, and you certainly may recall from last year's shir, this actually is a very big distinction between Sephardim and Ashkenazim. Sephardi women, by and large, do not make brachos on women they're not obligated in. Because that was the Rambam's view. How can you say v'tzivanu, I wasn't obligated? But the more common minhag in Ashkenazic circles is that women don't have to do the mitzvah, they're exempt. But if she does sit in the sukkah, if she does shake the lulav, then she can and should make a bracha. That's the rekka, that's the background. The question is there any reason to assume that Sfirat Omer would be different? Right? We know that the majority is if you're not obligated, you can still do it. And then with a few exceptions, tzitzis or talis or tefillin. Again, now is not the discussion why, but those are not women's mitzvos, let's say. Not just exempt, but excluded. Where do you put Sfirat Omer? Is it in that smaller group or in the bigger group? So this is a very fascinating machlokas. Yeah?
Well, I would say that
should women be allowed to count, or should there be? Is there some reason why women would be excluded?
I think she could count.
Okay.
Everyone was given the Torah.
Okay. Good. Intuit again. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm saying we don't even need to come on to that essay because in general the default is. Like, why not? Unless you give me a reason. Like, the default is she should be able to until proven otherwise. So here I want to point out two things that are really interesting. This will bring us to the conclusion of this year. Number one is, there is a Kabbalistic tradition. And that was my way of saying, I don't understand it. There's a Kabbalistic tradition that Sfirat Omer is masculine.
What?
Masculine. In the Kabbalistic forces, I don't really know anything about Kabbalah, but in the world of mysticism, they speak about feminine forces and masculine forces, and it's not necessarily even better or worse. There are some of these feminine forces, Hashem has certain feminine characteristics, there's feminine spheros, and some of those are very, very powerful. But the other things are masculine. And the Zohar says in source number 13, Lo it masar chushbana da ela legavri b'luchudayu. That this period, this counting, this cheshbon, this counting, the mitzvah Sfirat Omer, was only given to men. It's somehow masculine in metaphysical, spiritual forces. Chvesnish, what that means. But that's what the Zohar says. Most poskim ignore it. But there are some, not all, but stavka, some in the Sephardi community. For example, source 14, that is the Rav Pa'alim, that's the Ben Ish Chai from Baghdad. So, for example, in our most recent generation, the great Sephardi Rishon Lezion and Posek, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, was very, very influenced by the Ben Ish Chai. I didn't look up to see Rav Mordechai Eliyahu how he paskined, but I'd be shocked if he didn't agree, because he very, very commonly, for example, Rav Avad Yosef, less so. But Rav Mordechai Eliyahu was very, very into the Ben Ish Chai, and source number 13 says the Ben Ish Chai, he's quoting the Arizal, because again, once it's in the Zohar, then it became in the Arizal, that there's this Kabbalistic reason for women not to count. And therefore, even though ordinarily we would have assumed from a halachic, legal perspective, why wouldn't women count? So you're not obligated. But count like sukkah, count like lulav, count like shofar. Do a mitzvah. Nevertheless, it's not true. Ein rishayin l'kayin osan b'tar zanav. They're not allowed to volunteer. Because there's something, again, he doesn't explain why, other than kacha. Right? There's a lightning bolt that came out of the Kabbalistic sky and said no. So if one is very nervous or sensitive to Kabbalah, then you can't count. And there are women. I think it's more common in the Sephardi community, but I know of at least one Rabbanit. She's in like the Neo-Hasidic, Datilumi, spiritual world, who doesn't count. Mishita, because it's a Kabbalistic thing, and she's into Kabbalah, and she says, Kabbalistically women shouldn't count. Okay, but that's obviously not the more mainstream view. Yes?
Could that be why I know people like my mother said, women don't count? Polish. She came from Hasidic Europe.
Is it possible? Yes, it's possible. I can't know for sure. Listen, when my mother grew up, I never asked my mother this question. I should, but I can tell you, I have a bitter one. I think I've discussed this in the past. My mother grew up, I assume she wasn't the only one, women didn't send the sukkah. No! That's not for women.
Right.
It's for you to... Right. Why? Again, I don't want to run out of time, so let's go. My point is, sometimes there's very prosaic, if you will, pragmatic balabatish explanations, and sometimes it's Kabbalah. I don't know for sure why your mother didn't count or why she didn't count, but it's possible. Yes, it's possible. Let me move on, because this, again, most of us are not living in a world in which we're making decisions based on the Zohar. So let's turn to the last few sources, and these I think are much more interesting as they relate to your life and mine. Source number 15, the Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham is a major player, right? Very outsized, influential Polish Ashkenazi posek, commenting on the Shulchan Aruch, and he says, yes, women are exempt, peturos misfira, after all, it's a business man grama, and yet, not only are they allowed to count, mihu kvar shavya alaychova. Says Magen Avraham, he testifies that in Poland, a few hundred years ago, not only were women allowed to count, not only were some women counting, so many women were counting. It became universal that it became obligatory via minhag. It was kind of like a poor man's kitnios. It became the community. It was from the ground up. It was grassroots. All the women were counting, and therefore it became obligatory. If you had asked the Magen Avraham, a random woman in Poland in his day, do I have to count? Yes. What do you mean? Is it Magen Avraham? Yes. But the minhag is to count, and that obligates you to count. Wow. Now, if you take a look at the Aruch HaShulchan, who's writing in Belarus, you know, 100 plus years after, 102, 150 years or so after that, I forget the chronology exactly, but he's living later already, says Aruch HaShulchan, women are exempt, that's already not controversial anymore. Umikal Makom, source 16, Nahugu Levarech Ulimnos. Kachom is my grandma. So, the Aruch HaShulchan takes a more moderate position. He holds like a few of the women in the room. Aruch HaShulchan says, you're not obligated. But if you want, you can. And if you can, you can make a bracha, because we're Ashkenazim, and Ashkenazim make brachas too. He does not go as far as the Magen Avraham. And I would deduce that, at least in Belarus in his days, evidently it wasn't so widespread that women were counting, and therefore he didn't feel there was some big minhag that women have to count. But he has no reason they shouldn't count. Why not? If you want, great. It's a mitzvah too. Source number 17, the Mishnah Berura. On his own, says pretty much the same thing as the Aruch HaShulchan, but he goes further. He says explicitly at the end of source, the first line of source number 17, Ucha Meduma, the Medina Seinu, Lo Nehigi Nashi Klal Lispor. He says, listen, I'm in Russia and I'm in their, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s, but I'm telling you, it ain't the same thing as what was happening in the time of the Magen Avraham in Poland. He says, my impression is, I did a seker, you know, I asked all the 18 people in Radin. Iran was a very small town. It didn't have 18 people, but it was dirt roads. It wasn't paved. Chofetz Chaim lived mamish in a shtetl. He was not from the big city. So he said, it's just, as far as I know, women don't count. He's not against it. He holds like they, if they want, they can count. But this idea that women are obligated because they became the minhag, he doesn't know what it, but then, and here's where the controversial comes. We'll end with a little controversy, and then we'll pivot back. Don't worry, Mom. Akula's coming. I'm very scared of you always. Anyway, it's reverence. It's reverence and respect for my mother-in-law. Says the Mishnah Berura, he quotes a sefer called the Shulchan Shlomo. And I gave you the original in source number 18, that this is the Mishnah Berura quoting. It's not his own, it's not his own opinion, but he does adopt it. Shulchan Shlomo says women shouldn't count. Now, not for some Kabbalistic reasons. He's not going there. He has more prosaic reasons. He says, number one is, look at the way the Mishnah Berurah presents it. Al kaponim lo yivarchu, deha bevada yitu b'yom echad. He says, they're going to mess up. They're going to make a mistake. Now, you could read, you know, all, you know, if you wanted to be uncharitable, you could read something very not nice into the way he said that. But I don't think there's any reason to. I think it's not just a good midah to be charitable to other people. I think it's actually more compelling to say very simply, it's very unlikely for women to be able to maintain the 49-day count for reasons that were already enunciated. Number one is, it's not hard in the way that certain other things are hard, but it's very hard in the sense that it takes 49 days. You just have to get it right once. You have to get it right 49 times. And, as was mentioned before, the main reason why men remember to count is they go to Maariv. If you don't go to Maariv, and most women, Betzedek even, most women don't even daven Maariv. Forget, go to shul, they don't daven Maariv. It's much harder to remember. And therefore, it's almost guaranteed that they will forget. Now, he adds a second point, which was also historically true, which is that most women were illiterate. Either they couldn't read, and even if they could read, or at least they knew how to say by heart, they didn't know what they were saying. So, first of all, the count wasn't as meaningful. It's not as meaningful psychologically, you're not as likely to do it anyway. Maybe you're not even yotzei the mitzvah, it sounds like he's hinting at, if you don't understand. But these are a lot of very honest, they may be lamentable, but they were accurate historically, phenomenon. And therefore, he felt that it's very unlikely for a woman to be able to make it all 49 days. Now, here we have to add one point that is not said explicitly, but that Esther, the Esther in the front row said earlier, which is what he seems to be assuming the Mishnah Berurah is that there is a downside. Someone has said before, the Esther in the back row, right, what would be the downside? Why not? Why not count? Why not count? So, as Esther Grossman alluded to, and this is what the Mishnah Berurah seems to be very bothered by, is if you assume that this is all one big mitzvah with 49 parts, so if you miss one, it's like that game that kids like to play on Shabbos afternoon. What's that, Jenga? What is that? Like Jenga, right? If you miss one piece, well, only one piece. That's great. The whole thing comes tumbling down. If you're going to start counting with a bracha, and then you're going to get out, and it's not my fault, I don't go to Minyan, and I'm not so literate, I don't really know the words, then retroactively, all those brachas that I did make, I made it the first 12 days, then I got out. I made it the first 3 days. Whatever it is, I made it. I made it 18 days, 27 days, and now I'm out. Maybe retroactively, all those days are brachas levatala. He seems to be worried about that, and therefore he says, now, you can say, we're only human, how do you know a man's not going to forget? And a chanami, you don't. But the odds of a man remembering were better given their education and minyan observance. Therefore, since he was very, not bullish on the prospect of women practically remembering, the downside of maybe it'll be brachos levatala kick in. But here, and with this we conclude, is I want to say it's even in its day, this Mishnah Berurah, which is really just the Shulchan Shlomo, for reasons I don't have time to get into because we're about to finish, was very highly debatable. This is not the most convincing Mishnah Berurah I've ever seen. But more importantly, we don't have to, pile on the Mishnah Berurah. We could even say, at least potentially, maybe in his day he was right. The question is it still true? And in a Metzius level, it's clearly not true. It's still not true that most women still don't daven Maariv, and even fewer will go to shul on Maariv. That is still true, and probably will always be true. But what is not true is, number one, is women now are educated, as we said before. Certainly understand Hebrew on that level, and if they don't, they got a Hebrew English sitter. I mean, that's all irrelevant now, Baruch Hashem, that women are educated. Right? The women weren't always educated, now they're educated. So they understand. They understand the halachos, they understand the words, they go to Shir with source sheets, all of this stuff is a game. And more than that, we also have ways to remember if you're not at Maariv. Right? My in-law's good friends, the Pfeiffers, right? Milton, for many, many years, he would every year come up with a different creative way to remind people. He made pillowcases. You'd put on your pillow, and therefore every night before you went to bed, you'd see the pillowcase, Shevash Abbasos Tamimos, and the whole thing. This would remind you. Right? And then people used to come up with all sorts of creative things. And now that's kind of been out of business. That's like the VHS tapes or CDs. You don't need it anymore because now you have the apps and the email reminders and the WhatsApp groups. Forget the magnets that you can put on your fridge. That was like already, circa 20 years ago. Even that's passe now. So again, could a person forget? Of course a person can forget, male or female. But there's so many ways to remember. My wife gets the email. I guess it's an email from the OU every day. Literally, every night it's the same thing. Like, it was 10-something at night last night. She's like, oh, I didn't count Svira. Why did she all of a sudden remember? Because she opened her phone and she saw the email from the OU. And then she counted. So given those two changes, which are profound, many serious contemporary poskim hold that nowadays it should go back to what the Aruch HaShulchan and really the Mishnah Berurah himself have really said, which is not that women are obligated. I don't think we're going to get to the point that the Magen Avraham, I haven't seen anyone said like the Magen Avraham women are obligated to count. But there's no reason women shouldn't count, and women should be encouraged to count. And this is not just David Gottlieb, your liberal son-in-law, speaking. This is Rav Asher Weiss has published this. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach published this. He should have a Refuah Shleima. Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky passing this way in a sefer, and in Eretz Yisrael, more recently in the Panini Halacha, all says the same thing. Now, if a person knows I'm not going to remember, I know myself, or a person knows they're going in for surgery or they're going in for something, then that's an interesting question, and that's a question for men too, but especially for women who aren't obligated. And there, some posting would say, don't even start. If you think there's a good chance you're going to remember, and you have the same ways to remember like everybody else, go for it, and hopefully you'll remember. And again, the percentage of people who are remembering to get all the way to 49 in our generation is much more than it ever was because of all of these devices and different ways to remember. But if a person really was sure they weren't going to remember, so then there are some poskim would say to women, then better not to count with a bracha, even from the beginning. But even that, personally, if you ask Rabbi Gottlieb, I'm not sure I would agree with that, but that's for another time. But in a more typical situation, which is, listen, life's busy, life's hectic. Maybe I'll forget, maybe I won't. But on the other hand, I signed up for all these email reminders, and if I didn't sign up, someone else signed me up. And someone sold my list to a different email organization, and they're sending me reminders, and I got 4 magnets, and I got everything else I got. So then there's a very good chance that an average person is going to remember. And therefore, I see no reason why women shouldn't be encouraged to try, and hopefully they'll be successful. But again, as was said before, you should do it seriously. Right? You're saying, it's a mitzvah, so all mitzvahs should be serious. You're saying a bracha. Of course it should be done seriously. It takes, you know, 5 seconds, 8 seconds, how long does it take? 10 seconds if you really have a lot of kavana. So why not do it? And that would be, I think, a very meaningful way to hopefully build up momentum and excitement to Shavuos and Matan Torah. Wonderful to see everybody. Good to be back. Merit Hashem, another shiur next week.